Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Internet, it is Friday, December 21st, and you are listening to Waypoint Radio, episode 211, the last of our regular Waypoint Radios. We didn't want to do a regular Waypoint Radio. We were going to do another end-of-year thing for this, and then what happened was December kept putting games out that we had to play and talk about. I'm your host, Austin Walker. Joining me today here in Lobby 1, Natalie Watson.
How fucking dare clapping. They?
Also here, Danielle Riendo.
Hi, Danielle. I'm good at clapping.
You're good at clapping. Yeah. Rob Zachney.
Hey, what's up?
Hey, how you doing? What's up with you? I don't know. What's up?
Just rocking this flannel.
Yeah, you know, dude.
Hey, Rob, I really like that flannel.
Oh, thank you, Natalie. I had a feeling you'd like it. I looked at my closet. I was like, I'm going to wear my Waypoint flannel.
It's nice.
The orange next to that periwinkle.
It works.
Colors.
I love them.
I'm here for them.
Also coming here from Kirkland Country. Patrick Klepek.
I told you, the Binny's 2-for-1 on the Dewar's White Label is a good deal. It's better than the Kirkland, so I'm moving up.
Okay.
And that's
Binny's Beverage
card.
Depot, for those of you who don't watch the Blackhawks. Patrick's needs can't be satisfied at a liquor store, but a Beverage Depot is really more his speed.
Like, I only buy liquor at the Costco warehouse, the Binny's Depot. And that basement around the corner in which I'm not sure what he puts in it, but I lose track of time for 12 hours.
Yeah, good
wherever
stuff.
Patrick goes, he brings his man cave with him.
Oh, boy. We have, Danielle, we only have you for a limited amount of time, so I want to dig right into the game that you have been playing lately. The very beautiful platformer, I can't pronounce it. I don't know how to, I can't.
Ambergris.
It's not gris, and it's not ambergris. That's a different thing.
Gris.
I can't roll my R's.
Gris.
I've never learned.
Gris.
I can only roll my R's when I sneeze. I think I might have like a speech impediment that like I wouldn't know as an English speaker, but I can't actually roll my R's. I can fake it.
The only time I actually roll an R
is when I'm sneezing.
When you think about it and then sneeze, you can roll the R? Or is it just naturally when you sneeze, you're rolling R's?
Just naturally. It's more like a trill, I guess, is the way it's been described to me.
Yeah, sure.
Interesting.
Let's talk about this game before Danielle has to run.
All right, I have 10 minutes, and it might not take 10 minutes, but I have been playing Grease.
I'm going to say Grease.
Grease.
Okay.
Lightning. It's by Nomada Studio and published by Devolver. It is extremely pretty, hand-painted, aesthetic, very sort of pastel, lots of purples, lots of reds, lots of beautiful tones. Platformer. And I quite like it. I'm probably about 2 hours in. I don't think it's a super long game, so I feel like I've done a good chunk. Okay, cool. You've played it.
Yeah, I finished it, yeah.
Oh, all right, rad.
Yeah, I've also put about an hour in, I think. So talk about it a little bit.
All right, cool. Well, it is a platformer as not very subtle metaphor for grief or mental illness or some sort of mental struggle. The game begins with, her name? Is Grease? I don't know, but the protagonist is sort of singing at the very beginning cutscene, and then her voice is sort of taken away from her, and she's thrown into this void of white snow, which, by the way, as an official winter hater of life, as the official person with a war on winter, I really appreciated that winter is the metaphor for depression here, lack of color, lack of feeling, lack of humanity. Perfect. It was a perfect metaphor for winter. Anyway. And you sort of stumble around in the snow until you are finally able to walk and then run and then jump. And then you go into levels that are sort of arranged around a color scheme. And they could be seen as a sort of metaphor for the stages of grieving, or they could be seen as a metaphor for, you know, the ways in which people are challenged, either sort of mentally or dealing with mental illness. It's a sort of very unsubtle metaphor, I would say, but I think it works. I think it actually works pretty nicely, even if it is pretty unsubtle. There's a really cool piece at Polygon called Grease Mirrors, the Stages of Grief Through Art, Sound, and Design by Ashley O, who goes into sort of how every area is color-coded to be a sort of like, here's anger, here's denial, here's, you know, sort of the other stages of grief, and then finally acceptance. But yeah, just really, really pretty. Mechanically, fairly simple. You're mostly sort of running and jumping, and then you gain an ability in each sort of color area to mm-hmm. deal with the obstacles around you. But yeah, I think the thing that most people will see is that it's absolutely gorgeous, and really the art style, like the animation flows really, really, really nicely.
Yeah, it's hard to undersell. It's hard to oversell how strong the animation is, and some of the visual design of the locations and the like the ruined architecture. And yeah. There's a bit where I am. It's like I said, I'm probably like 45 minutes, an hour in, and I'm at like a very green area now, I believe, that is just like overflowing with life and vines, and everything is overgrown and beautiful. And I really, really think that stuff really lands for me. There's something about this game that feels like it is like a few years too late for me as a player. Sure. In that I've played a lot in that, like, if this had come out in the same window of Abzu, even.
It would have had to be earlier than that. I think we're thinking closer to Journey.
Because, I think it's post Journey because Journey opens the door.
It is like this game doesn't exist without Journey, but it feels of an era of that kind. So I agree.
It's gorgeous.
This game is beautiful.
But the fact that we're saying this over and over again is we're killing it with kindness.
So I played this game and felt nothing. Yeah. I know this game wanted me to feel things. It's gorgeous, sweeping imagery. The music is appropriately dramatic, and the sort of like the scope of like the events that are unfolding. But when, like, and I think you kind of alluded to this a little bit, Danielle, when you're speaking of the game, a lot of sort of like sort of kind of not sure where maybe the metaphor is like grief. Like, I don't actually really, you can read a lot into, I think, what happens, but I think the game actually layers whatever message it has obfuscated behind a lot of really pretty imagery instead of actually just being a little more forward about what it's actually trying to say. And because of that, I often found myself playing the game going like, this game really, like, if you did a checklist of like, here's how to make you feel something in a moment. It's like, got the big sweeping imagery, got the music, got images that could certainly be metaphor. I got those strings in the background. Oh, I can feel my heart pitter-pattering.
Some birds.
I guess. But like,
a lot of birds.
I didn't actually, none of it landed for me. It's like, I don't know what I'm actually supposed to feel, except that this game, it looked at games like Journey and said, oh, here's sort of a, kind of a template for sort of the game you build. And it is one of those. And so I certainly do not want to take anything away from people that looked at this and did find something that they identified with. But it landed completely empty for me. And actually, I wish the game had been just a little more, what is, like, it didn't need to.
Direct?
Because, like, as unsubtle as it is, it also doesn't, I never found that it actually found a way to communicate what that message. I got to the end and I was like, this is supposed to be like a redemption or it just didn't land for me at all.
There's two things I want to shout out. One is Alice Bell's review over at Rock Paper Shotgun, which kind of hits at some of this stuff, along with a sort of like, there are three types of women in video games. This is the third type. But I think like she also similarly has a bit of a struggle with it, which is like, I loved playing it. I really enjoyed what it looked like.
Totally.
But just some vagueness around it. There's also a thread by the designer and teacher, Anna Anthropy, makes the case that like Grease is a great example of why when we make games about things like grief, they're often more powerful. And I'm kind of paring down her words here, but are more powerful when they're specific. Or like what she wants is specific stories of grief, not this abstract generalist approach to like, oh, this whole thing is a metaphor for capital G grief, without ever getting into any specificity, because griefs, you know, the like being sad, having things taken from you, trauma, our trauma is a specific thing in life, and that what she would like to see in games is more explorations in that specific sense, rather than something like this, which fell flat for her because it was trying to do this really big generalized metaphor, which you know, it's one of those things where it's like metaphor still will land for some people. Mm-hmm. I'm still going to probably try to finish the game over the break.
It's totally worth finishing. Some of the mechanical stuff it does is Mike Fahey wrote a review of this on Kotaku, and one of the things he landed on was that one of the things that's also disappointing is this game picks up and puts down so many little cool mechanics. Yeah. Danielle, have you gotten to the ice area?
Yeah, I'm in the green area still.
Okay, I don't want to. Okay, then I do not want to spoil the mechanic that this game introduces for like 45 seconds and then throws away.
Wow.
Like there is, I've always admired about Nintendo the way that they, especially in the Mario games, the 3D Mario games, they'll just kind of like pick up an idea, let you play with it for a little bit, and then they just move on to the next one because they smartly realize it's better to want more of it than to get tired of it. But this game actually, it doesn't. I felt often didn't take things far enough where it's like, oh my gosh, you're playing with really cool concepts and then just discard them so quickly. It's a 3-hour game that I wish was a 6-hour game, which is not usually the message you would hear from me.
No.
Maybe partially is because the metaphor fell flat for me, but the mechanics actually were stronger. So I played this game at PAX, and I remember mostly talking about the aesthetic because I had a bad controller that kept like losing sync, and so I was never able to fully grasp like how good of a platformer it was. I think it's a totally solid platformer that's not asking the player to do a whole lot in terms of jumping, but there's so much ingenuity and cleverness in the level design and the little mechanics they have here that I ended up like wishing they had. It seems like maybe they might have truncated the game, maybe because of how the art was devised. I don't know exactly the development process, but in service of getting a tighter metaphor, but I would have actually loved more time spent just mechanically in the world.
Yeah, two quick things before I have to bounce, unfortunately. One being, I got the sense playing this that this was like prototyped mechanically before there was a sort of theme put on it, potentially.
Okay.
And or maybe the art also kind of came together and they sort of fell where they fell with it. It is working for me on some levels, but I wouldn't call it quite as successful as something that really kind of hits me in the gut. It's more like, no, I see what they're doing. I'm enjoying this sort of thematic stuff that they're doing. And the other thing being, it does sure feel like a game that's made for people who, like, there's a very specific type of player who plays like 5 games a year, and they're not the Maddens, they're not the sort of hardcore games. They're the sort of like, maybe you play one RPG and then you play like cool story games, and it does feel like, all right, this is right down the center of those five.
Yeah.
This is one of your 5. But I am enjoying it, and I do definitely want to beat it. I do think it's mechanically doing some cool stuff, and it's pretty. It's really pretty. When we say
it looks like a cartoon, that has been diminished to the point that it's no longer means anything. But this really sometimes does. Like, I feel like I'm watching an animated show, and I am controlling it.
Yeah.
Because there's a layer of polish and finesse to the animation here that it's like the fact that I'm playing a platformer specifically often feels like I'm controlling like a brief action sequence or a travel sequence in an animated show. There was really something like I found the art to be moving, even if I didn't find the metaphor was conveying to be moving. Yeah. I guess if that's maybe where I ended up landing.
I guess I should say really quick, just like we keep saying it's pretty, which is useful in a quick evaluative sense, but it's not an actually useful thing. And so like some of the stuff that I think it does really well, like it plays with saturation and color and layer really well, where there's a sequence early on where there's like a dust storm that kind of comes on that's like this deep red, this like deep almost burgundy red that covers the entire screen. And sometimes like it will hit so hard that you get pushed back. And in that moment, it's almost as if someone has like tossed a bunch of like blush in the air or something. Mm-hmm. And there's other times when like that stuff will stay around or will be like painted as if on different photos. Photoshop layers throughout this 2D world, and then similar things happen.
It does feel like when the world is being painted often as you're playing. Like for example, there's a boss sequence with an enormous bird or a crow where like as you are working your way through that sequence, like the way it like transforms as like the shape of it just like blotches the screen as it like works its way around. Like it feels very much often like there is a paintbrush that is like whipping against the screen to like transform the world, and like the creatures and the environment around you is morphing in real time as sort of like this, you know, like invisible hand of a painter is kind of like blotching it. It's like it feels deformative in a way that someone is like, okay, we're moving on to the next painting. I'm expressing this different image.
Right. Well, and then it'll shift, right? Like there's a sequence again pretty early on where you end up on a like a white reflecting pool and you're running around and there are like little birds underneath the pool, like the silhouettes of birds or butterflies or something. And they are like chasing you around, and that is so stark and clean and precise in contrast with the kind of like blush in the air.
And they're so geometric, like the use of like geometrics against like very like flowy abstract is so interesting and like captivating.
Yeah, so they're doing stuff here that I think visually like it really stands out. Go watch some gameplay footage of it. And you know, I definitely think like, if you're the sort of person who responds well to things like Journey or Abzu, like consider giving this a play.
You can do a whole lot worse. Like it's a good way of really saying it. Especially like as a holiday game, like sitting around, like
that
it's fine
ride.
On Switch. It's that a good thing ride. To play on Switch, but hey, like this game really does benefit from like a big screen, good, at the very least have headphones. I'm not usually someone that like, I'll use Apple head, you know, like I'm not usually someone that like worries about
Kirkland
that stuff,
headphones.
But this, you know what? If they sold them, I think about it.
They might.
They might.
Kirkland headphones.
Let me check eBay's latest drops.
I just buy Anchor, man. Anchor's like the Kirkland of electronics.
There you go.
Amazon Basics.
Amazon Basics.
No.
You need a 50-foot HDMI cable.
Amazon Basics has
Amazon
got you.
Amazon Basics got you covered.
They got you covered. They do. There are no Kirkland headphones as far as I can tell. I'm checking Costco's website right now and... I just
or
don't
you sign in as a member?
I'm not, so there you
go.
No
I got
problem.
You, fam. I got you.
Thank you, Natalie. Natalie, you researched that. Danielle, thank you for telling us about Greece. Thank you for coming through. For as always, if you want more Danielle in the next couple of weeks, already this week, the episode on Life is Strange, episode 1, will be up by now. And then what else, Danielle, have you been on that's already up? Kato, do you know off the top of your head?
It's already up.
Your list will be next week.
Yes.
God.
Kato and I did
there will be
lists.
One at the end.
And there'll be two more next week. So Danielle, people will find your wonderful voice throughout the rest of our holiday content, our end of year content going forward.
Yes.
We'll talk to you later.
Thank you. I'll be good. Be good at it. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
All right.
Peace.
Now that we're done. Rob, you have to stay. Rob, no. Rob, we're going to talk about Battlefield. Rob.
Time to kill.
We're going
to
talk about killing people.
TTK.
What? Germans! Rob! he got a beer. He's back. Was that a lager? What is that?
It's a
stout?
IPA.
Oh, an IPA. Ooh, an IPA at 12:34. That'll give you some kick. And
love
for the record, you've been awake since 3 a.m. So
very true.
That means
so
you're
it's,
in the
it's,
window.
It's basically 5 p.m.
It's basically 5 p.m. on a holiday week. On a Tuesday. Tuesday's a new Thursday. Thursday's a new Friday. You know, it all plays out like that.
That Christmas tree's looking nice behind you, let me say.
Wait, is there a Christmas tree back there?
Yeah.
Wait, slide.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, look at that.
Is that Olaf on the top?
No, that is a bear and an owl.
Oh, okay. From here, it looks like Olaf from Frozen.
From Frozen, yeah.
But now that I can see the bear and owl, I like it.
Are you the bear and your partner's the owl?
Please say yes.
That's what it is. It's really cute. That's really cute. That's really good. Rob, tell me about... You said before we started that Battlefield 5 was quote, flailing. What's happening?
Oh, this is so good. So I have really complicated feelings about Battlefield 5 just as it exists in the context of, like, Battlefield 1, like, where this series is at. And apparently, I'm not the only one, and EA felt there was a problem. There's just something... It feels like there's a casual, hardcore divide happening in Battlefield.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, unheard of in a multiplayer shooter. So EA came up with a solution, and Heather Alexander over Kotaku wrote a really good summary of what happened here. EA's solution, And, like, I know game design is hard. I know it is. And I know that everything sounds like it's very easy to armchair quarterback this shit.
It sure is.
Just on the
speaking of quarterbacks, Big Dick Nick. All right, we're going to continue.
Where's he at?
He's back.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, anyway, we'll come back on Waypoint.
Yeah, don't worry, yeah.
I'm sure.
Yeah, so DICE, like, changed the time to kill in Battlefield. And basically...
Wait, do you do that by, like, giving people more HP, by making bullets weaker?
The bullets got weaker.
Okay.
And that's basically what they did. They just applied a flat, like, across the board, every single gun just has a little bit less punch in Battlefield 5. The thing you have to bear in mind is that Battlefield 5 has really restrictive class weapon dynamics, right?
Okay. Like,
medics only carry SMGs.
Yeah, 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 totally. And you can get, like, an SMG, just from me playing it a little bit still, you can get an SMG that, like, is a little bit longer range, but you're never going to be a medic with a rifle.
Right. And other Battlefields in general, they've kind of let you, like, be that, right? They let you sort of specialize how you're going to play your role. Here they got very prescriptive with the way these roles operate and, like, what you can actually, like, do on the battlefield in addition to your class ability. So they come into this system that's, like, pretty tuned for this kind of interdependency and this sort of narrow, like, spectrum of possibilities when you're controlling your character. And they just kind of apply, like, a flat, like, nerf across the board to weapons a little bit to basically give the idea is if weapons are just a little less lethal, bad players will have more time to react to getting shot.
Yeah.
And they won't feel like they're just getting insta-killed in a match. And I don't know that was really the problem. Like I'm not a good Battlefield player. I'm really not. That's not really where I was having issues. Like, the thing that I think makes Battlefield 5 really tricky is that there are some maps that require an almost, like, Counter-Strike level of map knowledge for you to really figure out what the hell's going on. Like, the Rotterdam map is all about, like, knowing specific angles and what is visible from this, like, one particular position in one building. Like, you need to know that.
The third floor, like, west side window happens to be able to see far enough down the road that you can snipe at the point, the whatever point. Yeah.
Right. And there's no, you can't weapon tune your way around that. That's the game you made. And that, you know, that's, for better or worse, that is the dynamic of level like that. And there are a lot of levels that have that kind of, that impose those kind of, like, learning curves and challenges on players. But they decide that it's this time to kill number. So they tweak that. Immediately everyone's like, what the hell? This is not the game people have been playing for the last month or so. So there's a lot of people immediately feeling, you know, just resisting the change. And there's also a lot of people who just don't feel like this is still not solving the issues they had with the game. So EA's initial solution was to split the playlists. And there'd be core playlists, which took place on the old rule set. And there'd basically be, like, patch playlists
do they not have a test server or something where it's like, yo, here's the version ahead that we're fucking around with. Let us know what you think.
You know, I thought they, like, I don't know that they do have a test realm. Like, I generally don't fuck with stuff like that. So, like, PUBG is probably the only game I mess around with on that score.
Right.
So maybe this is the case where, like, they needed a public test realm and they just didn't have one. But they end up, like, splitting the playlists. And this lasts a day. And then a day later, last night, they basically, like, backed the car up. And they're like, you know, we learned a lot from this experiment already. And we've heard a lot of feedback. And so we're just going to undo that change, and we're going to merge the playlists back together. And
can you explain what splitting the playlists means? Like, does that mean the players are choosing which ones they're entering in, or are they like being...
So basically, Natalie, you would be like, I want to play on the core rules, which means the original time to kill variables.
Okay.
Or you'd be like,
but
I'm
within the same,
today.
Are these people playing within the same... like matches, or they're completely split? Okay.
So you're going to a server that's playing by one of two.
It's like the difference between like a survival and a creative server in Minecraft or something, right?
Yeah.
Which I'm not opposed to, like, especially in that metaphor, I think it actually makes a lot of sense. I think there's a world in which you can imagine launching a game that says, hey, we have an arcade mode and we have a sim mode, or we have a, but.
Are you new to Battlefield? Right. We're going to put you in these different servers, and then we're going to give you a warning, like, after, like, 4 or 5 hours or 15 matches, like, hey, like, this is kind of like hard mode, like, you're going to die faster, but now that you've got the ropes, you know, we're going to shift you over to these, which is kind of the real Battlefield experience.
But it does speak to something Rob was saying before, which is, like, there are multiple ways by which something like difficulty or realism or time to kill is not just a factor of how much damage does a gun do, it's also a factor of how are the maps designed? How are the guns designed? How are the character abilities designed? So, for instance, this is a game that does not just have passive healing, right? Like, obviously, time to kill literally means, you know, you aim a gun, you pull a trigger, how long before the person drops. But in a more abstract or averaged out sense, in a game like this where you have limited heals, that number is going to be shorter than it would be in a classic Call of Duty game where you could retreat behind, or Call of Duty is like still rough with this, but like a game where you could retreat, like Gears of War, for instance, is a game that has really long like time to kill between a person starting and that character dying, because it's easy to retreat, to get behind cover, to heal back up, those changes aren't just in the gun. Like, and so to some degree, it's like, yeah, I want the thing that Patrick, you just suggested as a player. It's one of those things I'm like, oh yeah, that sounds great. Put me in an easy mode until I learn the maps, until I get comfortable, and then slide me into the real shit. But the whole game has to be designed around that idea from the jump, and it doesn't sound like that's what this is. It sounds like a weird back fix.
So the interesting thing in the original like post where they were explaining why they're introducing the time to kill changes, and again, this is cited in Heather's article, is basically like DICE copying the fact that the wider player base is declining. Like, it's declining too quickly.
Well, this game has been, by most metrics, without EA coming out and saying it, because they wouldn't, that it's bombed. Yeah. Like, this is, they made a calculated mistake in the beta period where the game got, like, normally EA's done this thing where, like, hey, you know, you can play the game 2 weeks ahead of time or whatever, ahead of, like, the normal people. But it appears that period killed all buzz and interest for this game at around the same time when Call of Duty's Battle Royale mode, which seems to have tapered off, but was at least successful in generating a huge amount of initial interest in that game. Well, and that DICE maybe just miscalculated entirely on what this game should be.
So here's my... So a couple things. One, there's a very real fact that the pre-release versions of this game sucked. Like, every time, like, going back to the closed alpha, all the way to the, like, public beta that was basically the, like, you're playing it for the 2 weeks before the formal release, the pre-order beta, basically. All those versions were vastly inferior to the 1.0 version that rolled over the day of launch. Like, Austin and I were, like, sitting there on Thanksgiving weekend. Yeah. I was like, Austin, like, a shit ton of my review is premised on this experience I had that, like, literally... Like, the patch downloaded at midnight, and that experience basically vanished. Like, my review was in the stuff that I cared about in my review, a lot of it became a dead letter because there were so many issues in that pre-release version. On the strength of that pre-release version, I would have said, stay the fuck away from this game. This sucks. So I think that did hurt them, but I think it's a broader issue of... One of the things that people really hated in Battlefield 1 is that there was... apparently like some bullet randomization in the way the bullets traveled. So if you're just like spraying with a machine gun, not every round is going where your cursor is pointed. And that pissed people off because that felt like you're being, if your thing is like you've got really great precision and aim in Battlefield, having that randomization really damages your game and really like puts you on a more even footing with players who have not developed that skill as much.
Was it a realism argument? Like, oh, some bullets out of the gun wouldn't make
it. Yeah, so I mean, I think there is a good realism argument, which is that in general, like, people aren't fucking marksmen. Like, it's the Red Orchestra thing where they also had heavy suppression where if you were under fire, you became less accurate. So, like, if people are just pelting your position with shots, you have a hard time returning effective fire. And this is all stuff to make it feel a little bit more like you're just the common soldier in a war zone, right? You're not fucking Rambo, who's like putting
who's
rounds
done this map
on
a thousand
target.
Times.
Yeah. You're not Joel Fowler. You're not the Medical Squad. Like, you're just, you know, you're just Rob Zachney trying to, you know, grind out a match and hopefully not fuck his teammate. Unfortunately, that's usually how things go because I'm a bit of a lead anchor in these scenarios. But so the thing is, what that ends up making Battlefield 1 is more of a game of like positioning.
Wait,
right?
One or five? Sorry.
Battlefield 1.
Okay.
Battlefield, yeah.
The previous. Yeah.
So that ends up becoming more of a game of positioning where it's less about getting every round on target and opening fire from a more advantageous position, right? Like picking your moment, picking your location. If you're still an ace shot, you're still going to get the better of like 9 out of 10 engagements, but it tweaks the way the game works just a little bit. Battlefield 5, they went with this, where you point is where you're going to hit. That's kind of the model they went with. Now there's some ballistics modeling in the game that does reintroduce some interesting dynamics about the way the bullets travel, but in general, they're favoring the precision, like reflex shooter.
So you're
a bit more.
It might do the thing where the gun jumps between shots or whatever, or like the reticle gets wider. But if you're someone who plays this game 6 hours a day, 7 hours, 8 hours a day, you could probably eventually learn to compensate for that and move the mouse in the way that would like still keep all those on target.
And it feels real good if you like completely know that recoil pattern.
But if you're me, it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah. And then the game was undeniably just faster paced.
Right.
Like when I played it, I was shocked by how much more it has a almost Counter-Strike like round pacing on a lot of your spawns, where you're sort of running and gunning, and especially as like once you get into closer range, you see somebody, both sides open up, somebody's gonna be dead within like a second. That's just how that's going to play out. And that seems to have alienated a lot of people. To top it off with, there's just like, there are so many experiences now where the map dynamics are kind of at odds with the class dynamics. Like, if you played medic, you can only carry a submachine gun that's only effective at close range. I don't know, man. Like, on a big open desert map where there's no cover and there's hardly any structures, like, playing medic fucking sucks.
Right, like, which sucks is I like to play medic, you know?
Yeah, I played.
Yeah.
They've still got, like, medical crates. Like, PC Gamer had a good post about this where, like, you know, it was sort of a tongue-in-cheek post about you put the medical crate down, which becomes sort of a healing station. Nobody uses them because the game is too dynamic. Like, nobody's running back to heal. That's just not how this game works. But the mechanic lingers on. Like, Battlefield 5 just feels at odds with itself in a lot of ways, and it feels very reactive to, like, complaints people had about Battlefield 1, but again, like, it kind of returned to what I was saying with my original, like, review. It just feels like the game doesn't quite have, like, a strong identity for itself, and you're starting to see them kind of grope for one with weird after-release solutions.
Yeah. Before we take a quick break, I just want to say, on this note, like, I've also put a little more time into Vikendi, the PUBG snow map, and it's really fucking good.
Yeah.
I had a good playthrough with... God, who was I playing with the other day? Why am I blanking on who it was that I was playing through? I feel like a jerk. It was a friend. It was with Matt Pasquale, who helped me get my first ever chicken dinner, and Will Smith, friend of the site, Will Smith. And we ended up just like, I think it was before Will Smith joined, but we went out to some hot springs and we ended up trying to, so we made the bad choice. We were like, oh, this is a new map. We want to see everything on the new map. This place says hot springs. We got to go to the hot springs. It's time to relax, you know, kick back a little bit. And that was just at the edge of the circle. And we like went way out of our way to get there, like assholes. And so we did. And on the way back, we are cutting through a little town towards the south of the map that is like, I cannot say enough like how strong the identity of these locations on this map are. Cameron Kunzelman wrote about this for us on Friday. You should go back and read that column, waypoint.vice.com. The locations on this map are just like so, they feel so like real is such a corny word in some ways. There's a lot of detail to them. Specific. There's a specificity. There's this little town towards the south of the map that we got caught in. We were trying to like drive through it. And it felt like something out of, you know, I guess the movie that's coming to my mind, which I don't even know if has a sequence like this, is what is the follow-up to History of Violence called? Do you know what I'm talking about? The movie?
Eastern Promises?
Eastern Promises. Where just like tight and violent and like just not a good, like just completely caught in the fucking open, but in tight corridors and just ruined. These little like European style roads, these multi-leveled like little towns that have like different tiers. They way more curves than straight lines. All the architecture is just really great. Patrick, we have to get in there. We have to go back and play Snow Map. We have to do it because every game I've had so far has been really good. And it's done a lot of the thing you're talking about around positioning mattering in a sense more than the like pure accuracy stuff in Battlefield.
I'm surprised. Like, it just kicks ass. Like,
it does.
You would think that a map that's significantly bigger than like Sandhawk would be less specific and like feel less bespoke in every inch than Sandhawk does, but for some reason like there are so many, like every little like group of like three or four huts on Sandhawk is really kind of interchangeable to me. They feel so similar. They're, you know, they're all nestled on like, you know, near a couple rocky outcrops. This, like, I was playing a game with the Joels and Nixed. And we had this, we got in this like three, maybe four way encounter in this farm, like outside this farm where we're trying to like make a breakthrough to the next circle. And we come to this farm and like there's been enough shooting in the distance that like we know we're in the middle of a couple different groups. And we're looking at this farm and it's that great moment where you don't even see anybody, but you just have a feeling like there's something about it, right?
Yep.
The place just seems imbued with like certainty that like something is going to happen here. And sure enough, there's a group there, and no sooner have we spotted them than another group begins like to make its presence felt you know, in the distance off to the right. So we have to make a call, and we start like, we got to go in on this farm. And I can like visualize every single inch of the field, the burned out cars that were nearby, the exact breaks in the wall. The entire sequence played out like that scene in the original Bourne Identity where he's in that gunfight with Clive Owen and he's like out in that field. Yeah. The entire encounter felt almost like cinematic in that way. And it felt like, I know that farm. That is a specific farm now. I know what place that is. And it's not like the other buildings that are out there on the map. This is a location that I'm going to remember, and I'm going to encounter it in later games, and will always sort of have this memory like associated with
the history of this gunfight. Yeah. I think the mechanics in PUBG have always had that ability to create those moments, but having a map that's so well designed and that is so memorable and that has... part of it is just the distances in a sense, right? Like I think back to Erangel and like, yeah, like to the south of that one city, there's like those big, huge, there's this huge stretch of like wheat fields and hay bales. And like, there's a lot of open space, but like, it doesn't feel designed in the way that some of the
farms. I know that
here.
We won our game in a cabin, but I don't remember anything about that area other than it was a hill.
No, totally.
And that's true now, you know, a year later, and was true the day after that encounter.
Totally, exactly. So we're going to take a break, but sometime soon, we need to play PUBG. We have to
Can
do
I just
it.
Say something that's so pure about Joel? Our Joel.
Our Joel?
Joel Fowler.
Joel Fowler, yeah.
His computer started overheating during our game.
Yeah.
And it was because computers overheat when shit is happening, it would invariably overheat at inopportune moments.
Of course.
There was this encounter where we had a complete drop on these guys. And Joel, who I'm usually like waiting to make the calls, just can't because like things are so choppy that he's saying things like 4 or 5 seconds after I and so I end up still thinking he's like got a handle on the situation.
Oh, God.
And he really does not. We make some bad calls. I get a pretty excellent kill. Thank you for the new thank you for the new sensitivity settings, Joel. But he is like got that guy. Joel did not get that guy.
Oh.
So I think Joel's talking about the guy I shot. And the second one is unaccounted for, but I'm convinced they're both dead. I go in, I get gunned down. The next day, Joel's messaging me on Discord, and he's like, yeah, I just feel really bad. I just really need to get this computer thing fixed, because I just feel so guilty, because, like, I saw those guys, and they hurt you. I let them hurt you.
Oh, Joel.
That is playing PUBG with Joel Fowler.
That is playing PUBG just, with Joel Fowler.
It's always it's, protect Mr. President.
100%. It 100% is. So good. All right, let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we can talk about some more recent releases like Below. BRB.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
All right, we are back. And you can catch me 7 layers below the deep going into the ice caves. And following weird lights and dying over and over again, because I've been playing Cappy Games Below, a game that has been in production since
before time before, itself.
Yeah, time immemorial.
I'm basically the launch of the Xbox One.
Yeah, because it was one of those games that was shown off during the Xbox One, like
the first not its announcement, but the first E3. It was one of those like and here's. You know, one of our big indie exclusives getting behind. So yeah, this game has been kicking around for
quite some time. And you know, what I'll say is like a year ago, man, like it was a game that I sat down and played for 45 minutes 3 years ago at a PAX.
You sat down and watched me play 2 hours of
this
it
year.
A year
yeah.
ago.
Yeah, well,
like, this year.
This is what I was gonna say is like 2 or 3 years ago when I had my PAX demo of it. The first time was more than two because it was PAX West 2015, I guess, so 3 years ago. I still left it being like, I don't really know what this game is. I knew that it had, I knew it was like Legend of Zelda ish in some ways, like top down view, like Link to the Past era Legend of Zelda with like a button for a shield and a button for hitting with a sword. I knew there were survival elements because I knew I was like, taking a spear and getting some fish. I knew there were secrets in a Link to the Past style way or in an exploration game style way because I found a spear hidden behind a waterfall. I knew there was some crafting, but it seemed light. But I didn't know what the game was. I knew I was going down on this mysterious island into a cave system, a dark cave system. But I didn't know what the game was. And then earlier this year, we had that like 2 hour plus long demo where we started to see a little bit more of what the game was. And that gave me a better feeling for what Below would be, which is, in some ways, there is a degree to which it feels like a very methodical and less chaotic and less random, but not in a bad way, spelunky, in that there are the structure of like, oh, this is a biome that I'm going to go through a few levels of, then I'm going to get to a new biome that maybe has new enemies, and I'm going to be in that for a little while, and I'm going to have different concerns because the environment is going to be different, and that's going to make me play slightly differently. And obviously, it's different than Spelunky in a million ways, right? Spelunky doesn't have a coldness mechanic the way Below does.
No, but it's...
But you get what I'm saying.
You could slip on ice in Spelunky's... Like, sure. There's a different environmental consideration that forces you
to
alter
play
your play.
Slightly differently, right, totally. Yeah. Weirdly... I'm glad I watched that demo of you playing it for a few hours earlier this year because it helped me understand what the fuck this game was going into it. But also weirdly now, it's been strange going back through some of those areas. And like, I'm waiting still for the hook, if that makes sense, again.
I don't know if it's there.
So I got to something really weird, finally, okay. That, like, uh-huh. was like, what the fuck is going on? That made me feel like there is some other shit popping off down below. But also, I don't think okay. you're wrong.
I haven't played the it since that demo. But when I finished the demo, which was like, you know, it was it wasn't like I was doing a bunch of cycles of the game. Like I died
right.
2 hours into the game, made it to the third biome.
There's like one that's like caves, basically. It's just like the caves. Yes. It's dark. You have to use a lot of light. You use lots of, like, you use your torch. You use the special lantern that...
So I made it to the second biome,
no, you made
right?
it to the like third. You made it to third? The third. Second okay. one is icy. Yeah. It's ice and there's right. wolves, but there's light. And the third is where we got to, and we were like, yo, shit, there's different types of enemies.
They were really fast, and they beat the shit out of me. Super fast. But when I got to the end of that demo, like, the thing that I was left with was, I don't want to go through all that right. again. Like, that was a full 2 hours, and it wasn't like I got to the end of it and went, cool, learned a lot. I'm excited to, like, jump back into those previous areas, like, more efficiently or whatever. You know, at the time, we were given a little heads up about a secret of the game where, like, you're going to, you know, you were able to stash items and equipment in these different sort of areas of the game so that when you go on subsequent runs, you can leave extra stuff behind or go on runs that are purely about gathering items for a future run.
Right. There is also a sort of like, you get this pretty early. So I mean, I'm going to have to talk somewhat spoilery about Below. Below is the sort of game that has the aura of a game that you're not supposed to talk about anything. Do you know what I mean? You're supposed to be like, go in fresh, go in without seeing anything and just, you know, learn it all yourself. So I understand.
Do you feel like it warrants that?
I don't think so yet.
Okay.
Is what I'll say, right? Because
I also think some of the things that you don't know may turn out to be things that you would not want to play that game if you
right.
didn't know
so
about
I'd
them
rather
ahead
talk
of time.
About them ahead of time, and I would also rather the other side of that too, which is like if you're bashing your head against it, being like, "Why the fuck don't I have blank?" I'd rather say, "Yeah, don't worry, blank is coming." Like with Ashen that came out a few weeks ago, I played for the first 2 hours without having like a chest to put extra equipment. I was like, yo, is there not a way for me to do anything with this extra, with all these extra weapons? And so I looked on, the game had just come out. So I looked online and someone was like, oh, don't, just keep playing, you'll get the chest. So like, I want to say that with this, which is one. So again, if you don't want to know anything else, just jump ahead, go play the game. If it seems intriguing to you, it's interesting. I'm going to probably keep playing it. So there, you do eventually get a thing where when you go to a fire, There are fires in a Dark Souls-y sort of way, except it's not that you're like
are
leveling.
These bonfire, like
yeah,
these
yeah,
little
yeah.
ones?
Yeah, totally,
okay.
Yeah.
I'm watching a gameplay video in front of me.
Thank you, Natalie. So when you go to those bonfires, you can spend the currency that's dropped from enemies to either turn it blue, which means that you can teleport to it, which kind of sets it as a checkpoint that you can go back to if you die. So you can go to any bonfire or any fire, like campfire, and then teleport back to it. But you also just get the ability to go into like a weird subspace zone where you just have like a chest and some shelves to put extra food. And it ends up being like another dimensional space where you can leave stuff for your next run. Right. So you could be like, OK, I found this dope sword or I found like there is some degree of loot in this game. I found this armor. I found this like I found this like sweater or whatever the fuck that will keep me warm. But I'm not in the ice zone right now. I'll go into my weird dimensional.
So it's only
apartment.
Stuff that you're not currently using. You like can
you can leave it there. You leave it there. You don't. It is not like so this is a run based game. Zero. Go back to the basics. This is a run-based game in which you are exploring an island and going deeper and deeper below the island and finding old, weird, magical shit. That reminds me of a sort of there's like a slight Breath of the Wild thing here where it feels like this stuff is magical, but it has the sort of hard edges of technology, right? Lots of glowing lasery shit. I got into a space. I don't even remember how the fuck I got there, but suddenly I was in a space that was all that weird technology shit. Like, there were, like, weird magic drones flying around, and the level was reacting in wild ways.
Is it procedural?
So yes and no. Okay. It is, each level of the dungeon is a collection of proc gen in between rooms, and then there are like locked rooms that are like, okay, this is the room that has the big lake in it. Mm-hmm. And then if you swim to the north end, there is a ladder up that brings you back up to the beach at the top level.
Gotcha.
Wasn't it always the case that the exits are always in the
they're
same
in the same general
area?
Direction. So,
it's like, oh, if the exit to the area next is in the bottom right, you'll always generally want
exactly
to head
that.
to the bottom right
of the map.
If you wanted to get through an area faster
totally.
Instead of fully
that is exactly
exploring.
Right, and that does come up. What I found is that, and also on top of this, there is a layer of survival mechanics. Right, you have to eat. You get food pretty constant. Like I'm rarely low on raw food because
you can bleed. Right,
you can bleed, and you need bandages to stop bleeding. I mean, you will eventually just like bleed until you hit a point where you stop bleeding regularly. But you'll do a lot of damage as that bleed kind of works down. So you want to craft bandages, and you craft bandages by finding slime and by finding a bunch of different things. It is one of those games that's like you want to be on a message board talking to people or in a Discord chat talking. Like, oh wow, I just figured out how to make bandages. Like one of the early things is you realize there are leeches that will come and get your blood. And if you kill the leeches, you can get slime, which is a component in making bandages. And so there are times you're like, I'll get hit a little bit, so I'm bleeding, which will attract the leeches so they can eat my blood, and then I can kill them and use their... Rob is making a face, which is very funny to me. This whole notion has upset you. He's looking away.
It's so interesting to me how specific this is when you are so far, like, in terms of, like, the how you're playing. Like, you are so far pulled back from the actual, like, embodiment of your character. Like, you're
not,
like, right up.
Yeah,
you're not, like, right up there with your character or in your character's perspective. You're, like, pulled so far back and, like, so abstracted almost that it's so fascinating, like,
it is.
Where do you begin to like internalize that sort of?
Yeah. And so when you die, so eventually you die and you come back to the island as a new person. And it's all very, it has a certain deliberateness in its pacing and in its presentation. The game opens with like a 4 minute long, just like far, super high up shot. Like straight down vertical shot of a boat going through the water to where you don't even know what you're looking at for a minute or two. I kind of knew because I knew that this boat was going to land on an island eventually. And it slowly zooms in. And it's like, this is the game you're signing up for, motherfucker. This is it. This is the pacing you should expect from everything going forward. If that does not sound exciting to you, or if that does not sound like something you're interested in, eject. Fund this game right now because this is it, and like buckle up. And so it's funny, like I just came off of Ashen, which is similar in a lot of ways in that it's one of its best qualities is about its atmosphere. There's a tone it's setting. It's interested in light and darkness in terms of the way it's trying to produce interesting compositions. I think this is doing a lot of that stuff, but having just played Ashen, which let me do that stuff without the stress of the survival mechanics. I think I'm just not responding as positively as I would have hoped yet. You know, I think it's doing something, and I'm curious to see how it continues to do that stuff. And there are all these little touches that work for me really well. But I have not had that 3 a.m. I can't go to sleep yet moment. And in fact, what I've had instead are the moments of like, ah, fuck, I died again. I cannot get back to my fucking lantern and my body to get my stuff back. Like, I'm hitting the thing that you hit sometimes in, like, side-scrolling shooters do this sometimes, like, space shooters, you know, like, R-Type and Life Force and stuff like that, where, like, you, when you die, you lose the upgrades you had, which means getting, you cannot just jump back to continue playing where you're at without it being really hard because you've lost the upgrades that you have. Spelunky does this too to some degree, right? There's a point when you're playing Spelunky where if you jumped ahead to just start in the ice level but hadn't played through the caves and the jungle to get equipment and get yourself like kitted out.
You only unlock those shortcuts because you want to get familiar with the enemy types
100%.
In the world.
It's actually really
in
hard
no actual,
to jump ahead.
Yeah, no run. I mean, not, you know, plenty of players, I'm sure, do this that are more high level, but generally the flow of that game is you unlock the shortcuts because it's like, I didn't have time to figure out what was going. I died immediately. Yeah. It's just for you to kind of poke and prod and realize, oh, right, like, this is how I should approach and get around and navigate, because you need all of that equipment from the previous areas in order to have a fighting chance through the rest of the game. And part of the way that Spelunky works, or a Dark Souls, or any game that is sort of contingent on repetition, you going through areas over and over again, even if there is some a manner of proction involved and how the structure of that area is that, like, the mechanics themselves are, like, really interesting and dynamic in a way that makes that moment to moment as you do that exploration again, like, fulfilling and interesting.
Right.
And again, I haven't gone back to Below, and I am going to. I want to at least give it another shot. But I do know that at the end of that 2 hours, the combat and exploration didn't leave me with that, ooh, I'm excited to go through it again, because I'm curious to see how that the combat and exploration is going to play out. And again, it was one run. That's not enough come on a firm conclusion. But it didn't hook me in the same way those other games did on a mechanical level, which I've always found to be, like, pretty critical to being, like, you know, the reason it's okay to die in Dead Cells a billion times is, like, holy shit, it is fun as hell to play Dead Cells. And so that was my worry about Below that I hadn't solved on that first run that I need to figure out when I go back to it is, did I just miss it? Did I not spend enough time with it? Or does the game just not have that part of it? And then if it doesn't, is there enough for me to want to keep doing those runs to see what it's hiding further
right.
below?
And what I will say is, nice, by the way, hiding further below. Mm-hmm. What I will say is I can imagine the world in which there are things right now. Part of the reason it sucks to die for me right now is because everything feels hard fought. Everything feels like, oh man, I'm going to lose my fire arrows. God damn it. I just crafted those fire arrows. I didn't even get to use them. But I can imagine getting to a point where I'm like, all right, I'm going to start a new run. All right, first up, let me get the sticks that I need and the tar or whatever I need to make the fire arrows. Right now...
So you're just going
to
do a survival... Like, I'm wondering if, like, the flow of the game is, like, occasionally you're doing exploratory, go as far as you can, right. Like,
punch.
Push. And then there's others where it's like, hey, I'm going to put on a podcast. I'm just going to be collecting stuff because I'm
you have
built,
a limited,
like,
inventory
how did,
so that you cannot just stop...
Okay.
I mean, you can go back to your weird hammer space, like, alternate dimension... place and put stuff there, but even that has a limited inventory. You're upgrading that as you go. You're finding things in the world that upgrade it to add extra storage space. I just added a nice armchair in there, so there's there is something cool happening. This is what I'm talking about. And it does feel really good to discover stuff. So there is a flow between, like, all right, I'm just gonna go through the top levels and just, like, get some healing items going and cook up some stews and put them on my back. There's also other really neat ways in which it is giving you a sense of progression, which is like getting new like potion vials is important, because that is how you cook food or potions at campfires in this game. But you can only cook as many as you have vials, as you have, like, literally the glass for. And so as you progress and you find a potion, part of the thing that's cool is like, oh shit, I have a second vial now. And those moments are great. So, you know, you have a magic lantern that reveals traps and that reveals, like, stuff in the, like, weird stuff in the environment if you hover over it. And so the moments when you see something glimmer in the dark is really great. Right now, when you die and you lose that lantern until you get back to your corpse, it feels bad. And I want to get to the point where I'm comfortable enough with the mechanics, or instead of sitting on the caltrops and the fire arrows and the bomb that I built and not using them because I feel like they're so rare, I feel like, okay, I know how to just make these things. I know how to just get myself back stocked up to get back to a position where I'm, like, feel strong and feel well equipped. So I'm just going to start using this shit. And that could maybe give me sort of the feeling of, like, I have all these tools. I'm using them in fun ways. I'm engaging with the fights in a fun way. Enemies are hard right now. Like, yeah. I don't feel like I'm getting better at the combat yet. So we'll see.
I feel like...
How many hours have you put in?
3 or 4 or 5. Like, somewhere in there. Okay. A couple of nights, you know?
I feel like unexplored maybe is, like, a good...
Yeah, there's a comparison there.
Comparison in terms of, like, when you're talking about, like, the vials, like, just, like, having those sorts of, like, that discovery leading to just... materials that will, like,
resources
exactly
to,
and,
like,
then
open up possibilities sort of
and that kind of balance of, like, do I just want to power through and progress, or do I want to spend time, like, exploring things that, you know, may not pay out
totally It's a game that
but
I think
does the world enchant me enough, or right. like does?
And so that's the thing. It's like Ashen completely enchanted me, like literally, yeah. really enchanted me. I would like was just all I wanted to do is see whatever was around the next corner. Mm-hmm. Was like do the weird jumping mechanic so I could climb a little higher and get a really good screenshot. Whereas in this right now, I'm just kind of afraid all of the time, and sitting on resources and not like. I'm watching someone play right now, and they just shot four arrows. I can't imagine shooting four arrows. Why would I ever shoot four at four? I only have eight, yeah. motherfucker. Like
you just, I feel like you seem so absolutely just tiny.
Yeah,
like you seem so small.
Right?
Yeah,
this is a game that is like. That is very much like, yeah, motherfucker, the world is big and you are small.
Yeah.
Like, here's a shovel, start digging. And so I am conceptually into that a lot. Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of, like, can I also be moment to moment into that a lot? There was a good thread on Twitter this weekend about, I came into it where Campster, Errant Signal, Chris Franklin, a.k.a. a lot of a.k.a.s over there, was quote tweeting someone, basically making the case that he, Chris Franklin, really liked, I think, inventory limits or weight limits or something. And I was like, yeah, I love all sorts of things that frustrate you as a player. I'm that person. And yet, in Below, I haven't gotten to the point where I like that stuff yet. Mm. I love it when I'm playing a Bethesda game and it says my inventory limit is peaked. I'm that player who likes that shit. Like, I can't wait to go through this inventory and separate out the shit that is worth a lot of money versus the shit that's, like, garbage but weighs a lot, so I just drop it on the ground. I love it. I am that person. You're staring at me now, Natalie.
It couldn't be me.
Those decisions are fun for me. Like, yeah. They're just in my soul.
Yeah.
Or I just love the mundanity and, like, the slowness of, at the end of a session, be like, all right, I'm going to clear out all the garbage. Mm-hmm. I'm going to cook some stuff. I'm mm-hmm. just going to, like, go through all that. And that it isn't fun in the, like, this is a cool sword fight I'm in fun.
Yeah.
But it is, and I haven't hit that yet in Below. And that's telling, because if not me, then who?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And how long does it take to
totally. Get,
like, that's the worry totally. I have, same. Is that, okay, if that's 8-10 hours in, and then you get over that hump, and you're like, oh, okay, this is how you get over this, which then introduces how you could start conceiving of getting to whatever the end game or back half of,
totally.
Of Below is. That's just where a game lands on that. And again, that's where I come back up to the mechanical stuff, is because that's what does so much heavy lifting while you're getting yep. to that
totally.
Point. Is that moment-to-moment enjoyment. And, like, I didn't encounter this, but I've seen some other people, like, complaining about, because of, like, the extreme distance and the camera view, there's a lot of, like, one-and-done traps in the game that are theoretically easy to miss, but are also easy to not miss. Yeah. And that to die to that, a one-and-done, and then, like, whoop, go back to the start, go find your body, is a form of punishment that feels... Especially, again, if you're lacking the moment-to-moment, that stuff is going to weigh heavier because it's going to hit you harder than it would when you're like, ah, fuck it. Like, I'm just excited to get back into that sword fight. Because, like, sometimes the sword fight is what allows you to sort of, like, carry yourself till you can kind of sort of mentally and internally, like, get through the other parts of the game. And so I'm curious.
This is another game that feels like 4 years ago would have found a huge audience. Of people who are desperate for weird, obtuse things that need a wiki to fully understand. Like that, there was this.
Or also, there are games that are in development for too long.
Yeah.
And like games move on. Games are of a moment. And, you know, I'm not saying this is what happened to that game, but, you know, it's often the case that, you know, it's better when games stay in development as long as they should until they are done. But it is also possible that, you know, the threads that were being pulled on. You know,
yeah, totally is.
People have moved
totally
on.
Totally is. All right. We should go quickly to the question bucket because we got a couple good year-end questions here. If you have questions, you can send them in to gamingadvice.com with the podcast subject. Nope, that's not true. It's a question subject. Just put podcast in there.
Just attach podcast MP3s. Just, yeah,
send us
to...
your questions in MP3 format. Don't do that.
Waves.
Waves only. Og Vorbis. This one comes in from Matthias, who says, what non-digital games had the most impact for you this past year? I don't play any board games, war games, card games, etc. Anything that stands out? Rob, does anything come to mind for you this year? I know you play a lot.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, I mean, I think probably my highlight of the year was still Fields of Despair. Like,
yeah, same. I ain't played that board game, but sure. Fields of Despair, yeah, love it.
Summed it up pretty well, I think. Yeah, I mean, that was the World War One block game that did a really good job of kind of capturing the ebb and flow of the entire Western Front with a couple really simple mechanics, namely that every block of like a block could be anything from a strength value 1 up to like strength value 20.
Right, we talked about this on a past pod, right? Yeah.
Right, and so the fact that like it introduced this really nifty fog of war to a tabletop game where you'd be looking, like, you know the enemy positions, but you don't actually know anything about them, and you end up having to really commit a lot of preparation and planning and hope to any action you take and sort of masking your intentions in a way that seems really authentic to the subject matter and the way the different sides would have to sort of lay the groundwork before they could accomplish anything. So I think that was probably my standout tabletop experience of the year.
Nice. Patrick, Natalie, you have any non-digital games in your lives these days?
Potty training.
Nice. That's a game.
The art of baiting your child into doing things when they don't want to do them. Very popular in the latter half of 2018 has been, well, me saying, well, that's mine, you know, that's mine now. And then suddenly my daughter wants it. So it's like, she doesn't want to wear her pajamas, but it's like, cool, and those are my pajamas.
Wow, that's a good game. On.
And then suddenly, yo, actually, I've put those pajamas on my ass. Like, I want those. You know, the fine line of like, how many M&Ms should you give your kid so that they will go pee-pee in the potty, you know? Sometimes
three?
It's one, sometimes it's two. And then once they've figured out the game and they're going, I want to go potty. Yeah. And it's like, do you want to go? You're smart enough to be sarcastic and trick now. And then we go over, pulls those pants down, shows those M&M in the mouth. She goes, I'm done. And then you get up and then she just walks away. And says, but I can't break the game because I need you to eat the candy so that you will go potty. But then now you know that you get candy when
it's like a good game to me.
That sounds fun.
Two player, three player, something like that.
It's three player. Oh, the other game of, communication with your significant other, because now your child is smart enough to know if you are separated in different rooms and they ask for something and you've already had the yogurt in the morning and you're not supposed to have more than two yogurts in the morning because you will eat yogurt all day and that does some nasty things to your stomach if you've only been eating yogurt. But so you ask mama, can I have a yogurt? It's like, no, you already had a yogurt. Well, Dada doesn't know that you already had a yogurt this morning.
Hidden information game.
Kid runs over, says, hey, Dada, can I have a yogurt? Of course you can. You fucking love yogurt. Here's a yogurt. Mama comes over like, why the hell is she eating two yogurts? I didn't know she had a yogurt.
Could have checked the trash can. You would have seen the little yogurt.
Should just have a yogurt can. Mark those things.
You have like a yogurt calendar.
What's the thing like? I mean, you just put a mark on her, right? Like just like the way.
Mark her when she's yogurted.
Yeah, exactly. Like sort of like in the horror movie. You know, you like has this guy gotten morphine yet? Like that's you know, just do that whole medic thing where it's like, here's your yogurt, you know, quick dash with the permanent marker. You'll fix it in the next wash.
That's true. He's not wrong. Thanks, Rob. I'll pass
that
one.
You run
chain,
that, yeah. You run that through the system. You see if that works. God, this weekend I played a game I've been hoping to play for a long time, and I really enjoyed it. It's called Detective, a modern crime board game. It is out here by Portal Games. It is sort of like an evolution or a it's taken a lot of inspiration from Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective, which is one of my favorite board games ever. It is a crime solving game. It is a mystery game in which you and your friends need to solve a mystery. In the Sherlock Holmes model, the system, Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective, was like you get the premise of the crime. A famous, you know, steel magnate was found dead in his home, Watson, etc.
Yes.
British shit, you know, like that. And then you would go to different locations on the map. There'd be like a map of London, and you'd have a book with kind of locations, like you almost have like a phone book where you'd have people's names and businesses' names and stuff like that. And so you'd be like, oh, a steel magnate. Well, then we should, okay, he must have owned this business. So we'll go to this place on the map. And then you, in another book, you open it and it goes like, aha. And there's like a three paragraphs of what happens when you get there, right? And sometimes you get there and it's like, ooh, like this is, I found out that the steel magnate was having an affair. Or sometimes ooh. You go somewhere and they're like, yeah, he was a good boss. And that's all they say, right? And you're like, fuck, this is a waste of time. Detective goes, at the end of that game, at the end of Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective, you eventually go to the asshole Sherlock Holmes, and he's like, I solved this in only going to four places. And you look at your list, and it's like 42. And then he goes like, now why was the steel magnate killed? And you're like, oh, I know that, because he was having an affair. And then he asks you some other bullshit like, and what happened to the lions? And you go, I never, lions? There are lions in this? What the fuck are you talking about, Sherlock? So, it's one of my favorite games, but I'm happy someone decided to try to like, you know, give it some modern touch-ups, you know, and take it in some new directions. So Detective is a game for like 1 to 5 players. You could theoretically play it by yourself. I played it with 2 other friends. I have friends, thank you. And you are detectives working for what I already think is a very shady group called the Antares Intelligence Agency, which seems to be a private investigation firm that is being subcontracted to the FBI.
Space for, Pinkertons.
Oh, yeah, they're space. Because it's modern. It's modern or near modern. And already there is a conspiracy. There's a big picture conspiracy happening here. So it's 5 cases. This is a board game in the sense that, like, you know, the door has sort of been opened in the post-legacy board game world of games that you play through once and that is it. So there are 5 cases. I think there's maybe a 6th bonus case online, but you have to play them in consecutive order. And when you're done, you've done the cases. You're not going to like replay case 1 and pretend you don't remember who the fuck, what happened, right? So the way it works is there is a board with 5 locations on it. It's like headquarters, the lab, the like police department, a courthouse, and then there's one that's just like field work, which is just like the world outside of those 4 official places. There is a calendar that says what day of the case it is. And there is a kind of like a time, there's like a clock at the bottom of the page. I love clocks in games. And you have a certain number of days to get the job done. And so it's like day 1, you know, 8 a.m. What do you do? Where do you go? What do you look into? And so it opens with like, here's the crime. Instead of being like, oh, there's a dead steel magnet. The first crime in Detective is super interesting immediately. And you'll already see like what's up with this game, which is you get a call that a weird Polish watch showed up at an auction house. And that's strange because that watch was supposed to be in a museum in Poland in the 1930s. That was where it was supposed to be. And then it was stolen by a Nazi doctor. Why is it in Virginia? Why is this stolen watch in Virginia? Was there a Nazi in Virginia? ? And so you end up going down this road of looking into various things. Or you go to you can go to the police department and look at the watch that has been seized, right? And then you can take that watch to a historian and see, okay, well, what's up with this watch? Who had this watch originally? And as you're doing that, the clock is going forward. And one, you are only allowed – you have a stress meter that increases per hour you spend doing overtime work and also decreases your score. If you max out your stress, the case is over and you have to start answering the endgame questions immediately.
Damn.
Because you just burnt the
labor
fuck out.
Labor solves cases.
Labor solves cases, motherfucker. Labor closes. The second thing that's really cool is there's an entire internet database that you're attached to for the game where you will sometimes get like a, you'll get a name and it'll be like, oh, this card that you've drawn says like, look up Robert Smith in the database, and you type in Robert.Smith, and there are these moments where you go like, you know, you turn to the rest of your friends and you're like, oh shit, like this guy robbed a bank 35 years ago. What? That didn't actually happen in this case, but like there are robbery, like you end up going through kind of, one of you gets to play the person in NCIS or CSI Cyber who is the computer person who is like, I'm going to type in the whatever the file number is on this piece of evidence and pull up the sheet that has the, you know, the mugshot of the person plus you're cops in this game. I want to be clear. You play as cops. I want to, like, they're private cops. Maybe you're an investigative journalist. That's one of the roles you could be. Anyway, But like you get this great feeling of like digging into a database. And then the third thing it does is sometimes it'll be like, hey, just look this up. This look up the Spider, which is an organization that helped Nazis escape Germany at the end of the war. I like, look it up. That could help you in this case. I'm like, all right. And this is on Wikipedia reading about how Nazis escaped. And
like an
IRL Wikipedia.
Wow.
I'm just out here like learning shit. and eventually at the end of this, it does the same thing that is like, all right, tell me how this watch got here. You know, tell me why, how it was caught up in this other situation that has nothing to do with this watch. That has to do with just like a robbery.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just fun to solve mysteries together with friends. Like that's really so what it comes down to. It's cooperative. It's 100% cooperative. Lots of note taking, lots
rad.
Of speculation, lots of like, and because there's this time limit on it, you end up having the situation. Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective had a time limit in that every move you took that Sherlock didn't have to take, you lose points. This is not that. I mean, you the stress kind of does that, but what it really does is, all right, we only have a little bit of time left today. What do we do with the remains of our day? It's 2 p.m. The office closes at 5. We only have a 3 p.m. move and a 4 p.m. move left. What do we do with those? Do you want to spend an hour driving to the lab to try to get something fucking like analyzed? That analysis could take 3 or 4 hours. Do we really want to blow that? Like, especially if we're going to go back to the lab tomorrow. We're going to spend another hour driving out to the lab tomorrow. We should just go tomorrow and we should fucking do both of them tomorrow. And then someone says, like, no, but if we do that tomorrow, it's 2 4-hour-long analyses. That's the whole day. We're going to spend the whole day in the lab. I want to be in the field. I want to go talk to people. And that stuff, that tension is really fun.
So it's everyone like, has to go.
You decide together.
Yeah.
There is one car. You go together. Everyone's just a little car figurine.
That's
you
really
put it
cute.
On the map. It's so good. And I haven't even like talked about like special abilities because there are things that happen where you go to a place, you draw a card. The card says, all right, Susie at the evidence desk gives you the box with the old diary in it. And then it can say like, all right, well, if you spend a research token, you can flip this card over and read what's on the back. And you're like, well, fuck, I only have one research token. And then your friend, you know, Allie says like, oh, don't forget, I have the ability that lets you turn any token into a wildcard token. So go ahead and spend that. And if we really need another research token later, I can use my ability to do that. So you do it and you flip it over and the card says like, oh, but then you notice, you know, Susie comes back and says, oh, wow, something fell out of the box. And she gives you a receipt that breaks open the case. Or you spend it and you're wrong. And she comes back and she's like, yeah, it was also this quarter in there.
It's like, a Mead notebook.
It's right, exactly. But one of the things this game does really well that again Sherlock didn't. Sherlock, besides the directory, also had newspapers, and it was like the news, like the one broadsheet from today, from the day the crime happened. But you were able to look at past newspapers also. So like 5 cases ago, there might have been something about a gem heist that is relevant on today's case.
Oh, cool.
Detective does this in a kind of forward-facing way. Sometimes you'll get a piece of – sometimes you'll finish reading the thing and you'll know you're on the wrong track for this current case because it'll say, hey, go through all these cards and find the one marked, you know, number 135. Put that into one of the evidence baggies and then on the evidence baggie write case number 3. And when you get to case number 3, you can open up that bag and read it then. Because what you found is something that's relevant, but not for this case.
Mm.
So, like, in the future, you've kind of already done some work. And so that's a neat way of being like, oh, you've hit a dead end. But there's never really a dead end when you're part of Antares because everything is connected. There's some secret. Man, it's really cool. There are some moments in this thing that were just like, really tiny thing right off the jump. And I'm not going to spoil what happens at the thing, but you read your briefing. At the end of the briefing, it says, you know, oh, and by the way, the funeral for Frank Smith is on Wednesday at 8 p.m. Just meet us there. And so instead of starting at the HQ that day, you can choose to go to the funeral and spend your opening turn at the funeral instead of just doing whatever at HQ. And some shit happens there. And like throughout that case, surprise, Frank Smith's name shows up elsewhere. And it's just like, Those little connective like runners that go throughout a game end up creating a really fun sense of TV mystery style pacing. We're like, oh shit, I recognize that name.
Mm-hmm.
So that's Detective. It's by Portal Games. It's really good so far. I'm super excited to keep playing through it. So that is my favorite board game, non-digital game from this year so far. So far. So far.
Nice.
One last one. Patrick, I really need your help on this. Maybe Natalie, too.
Yep.
Luke wants to know, what is the most accessible platform of the year for someone who hasn't played or really enjoyed that type of game in decades? Thank you and Merry Christmas, Luke. So if you were to pick one platformer from this year that was like, hey, go play this. Like, it's that good. Is that Celeste? What is that?
Well, it is Celeste. So you're going to watch a video of Celeste and or you're going to be reviews of Celeste. It's like, yo, this is a hardcore, extremely difficult platformer.
But.
True. That's but they added in options for you to completely manipulate the gameplay mechanics. Like, they are 100% fine with you adding another jump. With
oh, wow.
Changing
really?
The way stamina, the way, like, normally in the game when you're clinging to a wall, there's a stamina meter that, like, kicks you off so that you have to, you know, keep going. You want to turn that shit off? Fine. Like, game does not, I don't think it even impacts any achievements. Like, you want to game the system, like, good job, good for you. Like,
yeah, there's
who cares?
A huge, like, accessibility menu where you can change all of that sort of stuff to, like.
That's awesome.
Yeah, there's a huge, I wrote a big feature on it way earlier in the year. And the whole point was, like, it's both accessibility from the standpoint of, you know, people have different, you know, physical challenges in terms of playing games. It's also understanding that, like, who cares, right? Like, you know, designers can set up a structure in a way that they want you to have a certain experience. And I remember there's really great quotes from the lead designer in which he was just like, at some point, I just had to let go of that yeah. stuff where, look, if the difference is between a player enjoying all the other cool things we've done in this game, the amazing soundtrack, the incredible art, the, like, really interesting story about, like, struggling, dealing with, and coming to terms with mental health, is adding another jump. Like, you know, like, get over yourself. And this game, you know, sets up a parameters. Is like, this is the game they intend for you to play. But if you want to go around and mess with that stuff, no harm, no foul. Enjoy this game at your leisure. That doesn't can't work for every game, but I wish more games had things like that, even if you didn't want to take advantage of it. And so that's the one I would consider jumping into. But I also think Gris is also
oh yeah, good
it's
call.
Beautiful. It's simple. It's not particularly challenging from a platforming
there
point of view.
There are puzzles that are really rewarding to figure out.
Yeah, usually the platforming is rooted in you just figuring out the pattern of the puzzle in like Mega Man 2, like, disappearing platform sort of way. So it's not so much about, like, precision as much as just like, okay, I know what I have to do. Now just go do the three jumps. And so I would say, like, on that, those two games represent a really different spectrum of platformer that are satisfying in different ways. So those are probably my two recommendations.
Awesome.
Yeah, I would second Celeste. I haven't been able, I haven't gotten the chance to play Gris yet, but I'm planning on playing
Damn,
over
that's
the break.
How you say that word. You said it right away.
Yeah, Natalie Fuck. Crushed it.
I was
sorry.
Up on language. I'm just done with it.
Crushed it.
Wow. That sounds like Russian. That sounds like you're like the villain in a James Bond movie.
Natalie, is it possible for you to do that in the baby voice?
I crushed it.
Fuck.
Wow. Baby geniuses over here.
Baby genius.
I hate it.
Everyone's mad at me.
I was also thinking of this. I was thinking of this story that when you had me talking to my kid that recently, because I don't want to forget it.
Yeah,
it's a
please.
Good story. It's not related
That's
to
fine.
Anything.
We're in the free zone now, baby.
You know,
we just do whatever we
it's
want.
It's the end of the year.
Yeah.
It's, you know.
Pour
she,
another beer.
You know.
Okay.
She repeats everything, and so you got to be careful about that stuff. But it's like, also, it's sometimes you just don't remember that you said something. And so, you know, I don't know why I said it, but at some point, I, like, changed her. And she likes if you just kind of, like, poke fun at her and just, like, say things exaggerated. And I was like, get that big butt out of here. And she runs away. She knows what her butt is. And then the whole rest of the day, she was walking around the house. She would take off her clothes. Or if she was wearing her clothes, she'd look behind her, pull her pants down, look at her butt and go, I got a big butt. And then would walk away. She'd look at me, dead in the eyes. I got a big butt.
I love her.
And then I couldn't respond because if I laughed,
right.
if I acknowledged it.
She'll do it again.
I'm confirming that you should do it again. So I would just had to put on just my steely face possible. This is not fun.
God, I would be so weak to Jessica. I would be absolutely. She could walk all over me.
Eat 7 yogurts.
She could. I would let her eat as many yogurts as she wanted. Different styles, different types. Greek yogurt.
Yeah, you got a big bun. Here's some yogurt.
Let's go pet some ghosts.
Oh. Are there any lingering thoughts as we wrap up this year? Like, we obviously, we have a bunch of podcasts coming out over the next week still where we talk about our favorite games of the year and other stuff. But, like, you know, after that, we're going to have a 2019 Looking Ahead podcast also still and I think probably a Waypoints catch-up. So we have other opportunities to talk about what's next and what else in the world of pop culture we love. But we're staying in games. Any final thoughts before we put a wrap on 2018?
Games were better this year than I thought they were going to be. Halfway through the year, I was kind of feeling, oof. You know, there's some stuff. But got to the end of this year, and like, I had a lot of games. Like, I ended up liking this year's slate more than I thought I was.
Yeah, I definitely, not that many months ago, was like, I think I liked 3 games this year.
Yeah.
4 games.
Right. That's what I was worried about. Like, I can make a list. Like, there are 10 games that I could be like, I enjoyed that. But I ended up, like, looking at my list. Like a strong, like double that, like 5 or 6 that I feel
really strong about.
Really, really strong about.
Yeah. I think I'm just really grateful for the sort of rediscoverability that has happened over like past games getting like a new light and a new chance to shine, like Hollow Knight for me, or even like Unexplored, which I brought up earlier, like a lot of that having to do with games coming to console or more specifically coming to Switch. So
it's been a weird year for the Switch in some ways, right? Switch has not had any, I mean, Smash just hit, obviously, but before Smash, there had not been anything hugely successful at first party. Mario Tennis Aces was fun, but I don't think that stuck around. You know, that was one that, like, I halfway through the year, I was like, I guess that'll be on my list.
Yeah.
I like it, but...
But yeah, it's definitely been a weird year.
Been a lot of what you're saying, which is third-party releases, old games getting re-released, Mark of the Ninja, which we're playing through right now for Waypoint 101 is on Switch. Lots of little games like that have helped keep that system afloat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Rob, do you have any looking back on 2018 feelings or thoughts?
I mean, one, it just feels like it feels so dangerous at this point to be making a game because attention is so limited. Like, you're in competition so much for people's time. And I wonder, I think there's always a bit of distortion if you do this job for a living that your experience playing games is not going to be like people like just who do it as a hobby. And so I've always sort of believed that we tend to gravitate towards the idea that games should be shorter. They should be, you know, couple sitting experiences. And I've tried to resist that, but this was kind of the year where I really found myself wanting games to be more digestible, more like that maybe I could play through an entire act of the game in a sitting. And, you know, following a 3-act structure, like that it would be comprehensible on that scale. I think that is something that I am feeling more and more acutely because there are so many games that I just wish I'd had more time for this year.
Yeah.
But I think the bigger thing, you know, it's a bit of a down note, I suppose, is it also feels a bit like excess succeeds in a lot of ways. Like, the more time I put into Red Dead Redemption 2, I just found myself liking it less and less. Like, the flaws became more and more apparent. And it's not necessarily that, oh, I hate Rockstar. I wish this game had failed to teach those guys a lesson. But it's more, I think a lot of people who ended up buying that game because it was so culturally prominent and because there's such a massive marketing budget behind it, they will have chosen that experience over so many others that I think were probably better and would have been more rewarding this year. And I think the thing that scares me a little bit moving forward is that there are certain games, certain franchises that are almost impervious, not just to like critics' reviews, but even to their own audience's reaction. Go ahead. Like, downvote us. You hate this shit, but we know you'll buy it. You'll love it. And I feel like that happened a little bit toward the end of the year with Fallout 76 and with Red Dead, where it's like, look, they're big names, big studios. doesn't matter what you say, it doesn't matter what you feel, this is going to print money regardless.
Yeah, Red Dead's been weird. I went back to it a little bit recently, and I guess I'm probably in chapter 4 now, 4 of 7, and I'm right on the edge when I know that game is going to get bloated in a way that I really start disliking it based on what I've heard from other folks, based on what I've read and watched. And it is weird because so you get to that big city, right? You get to Saint-Denis, which is like their alternate New Orleans. And you know, when you go in, it's when Dutch gives his whole speech, like, you know, whatever, like, this is it, Arthur. Civilization. This is the best the people in the East have to offer. Smokestacks and bubble gum. I hate it. We need to go back out west where freedom lives, where the cows reign free and the people who were here first, who we all know
wild
they deserve
cows.
It. The wild cows.
There's no people. Gum on my shoes.
And no gum and no government. That's what I say. It's me, Dutch. And I'm like, actually, I don't want to leave Saint-Denis. I Austin Walker, think that city is rendered beautifully. And there are so many people are speaking French and there are black people and there are people playing trumpets and like the city and little ragamuffins who rob me all the fucking time. And yeah. I love it. I love that city. I don't want to leave it. And I might just not. I might just. And that's what happened to Arthur Morgan. He settled down for good in Saint-Denis and became a city boy. You know, maybe he took people out west every now and then to show them the ropes with a horse or whatever. Like, oh, look, this is how you ride a horse.
This is where I'm from.
This is where I'm from. Yeah, but I live here now. And that is the Austin
Walker's canonical. Not a brass band for fucking miles.
Yeah, this fucking garbage valley, you know? No one here is. There's no nice bars where you go in, everything stops, everyone turns and looks at you, unless they're going to pull a gun on you. Not like in Saint-Denis where there's just music flowing through the air and it's nice, you know? And that might be it for me in that game. And that's been a weird feeling because one of the questions I think we keep coming back to is like, there are so many huge bloated releases, and they're going to continue to be. And for many of us, the answer ends up being like, and I'm not going to play them. I'm going to go play small games on itch, right? Like another game I started playing this past week, it's short, and I'm going to probably finish it tonight is my hope, is Extreme Meat Punks Forever, which is has a fucking great name. It's by Heather Robertson, who is, I think, from did some school at NYU Game Center. She's very nice. I've met her a couple of times. Here is the pitch on Extreme Meat Punks Forever, a serial visual novel / mech brawler about four gay disasters beating up neo-Nazis and giant robots made of meat. Get ready for the worst road trip of all time. It's a tiny game on itch with like some basic mechanics and like some fun writing and cool characters, and it's queer as hell and it's anti-fascist and there are giant robots made of meat. And the one solution to the bloat is I'm going to play small stuff. And I think that's a good solution. And it's one that I hope we can continue to you know, focus on here in terms of giving those games coverage and talking about them on the podcast and doing free play articles and other small game articles, right? But also, I think that there is something that I've seen a lot of people do, including me, which is like, I'm going to make the bloat work for me, right? Like, they're going to make these big, bloated, weird games like Assassin's Creed Odyssey and Red Dead Redemption 2 and Fallout 76. And like, how do I turn this fucking thing into something for me? And partially, I think that that's like, I can see the case that it's a waste of time, that what we should be doing is just spending time with work by smaller artists.
But also the economy of, like, game journalism.
Yeah, but I just mean, I don't even just mean us. I mean, like, players.
I
have friends who are like, yeah, I just like being Arthur Morgan talking to people. Mm-hmm. And, like, these are people who are very publicly critical of Rockstar's labor practices and very critical of, who will say, like, you know, I'm just not going to play any. There's one of my friends the other day was like, yeah, there's a mission that I have heard is transphobic. I just don't need to play that shit. And like, I'm not going to let that in my life. Like, I'm not going to let that negative energy in my life. And there is, to some degree, always this vibe this year I've seen of people like, how do I take this thing that has attempted to be made for everybody and find my own place in it? I've seen that in Fallout 76 and people talking about how they're finding joy in it despite it being really broken. I've seen that in people who go back and mod games. Like it's something in my head in the front of my head right now, and I don't know where I stand on it yet, right? Like, but it's something going into 2019 that I think we're going to continue to see is like these huge giant things that are not for you. How do you make them for you? We have a great piece coming out this week. It should be up by the time you hear this from Dia about photo modes and the lack thereof, and kind of finding kind of the natural photo mode that is in every video game in some sense. That's really, really interesting. So check that out for sure. All right, I think that's going to do it for us for Waypoint Radio in 2018, our last regular Waypoint Radio of the year. Thank you so much for hanging out with us this year. Continue to enjoy the podcast content. It's going to keep coming. Next week, we are going to start digging into a couple more of our favorite games with those big long pods, but also our top 10 lists are going to hit. And associating or accompanying each of those will be an interview between the people whose pods come out or whose lists come out that day. So, for instance, I think Wednesday, my list goes up and Natalie's goes up, and there will be a conversation between me and Natalie about our lists so that we can talk about games that probably wouldn't be mentioned anywhere else in the week of Goaty, the week of our Lord Goaty. He's a goat.
Gotti.
Yeah.
Gotti.
Great movie.
Wait, is it a great movie?
Wow.
Is that the one with Travolta? Where Travolta directed plays John Gotti? E. Wait, what? Wait, who directed it?
E from Entourage.
E from Entourage directs that movie?
I'm pretty sure.
You
no. know that? No, that's
wow, 100% that
true.
Explains a lot. That dude seemed okay. I've only watched trailers and scenes from that movie. It looks bad.
The year of E directing Gotti and Aquaman
being real.
Actually
yeah,
being
I
a
know.
Film.
Unbelievable. Wow. Perfect. What's Vincent Chase doing these days? What's the actor doing?
Animal rights activism, I believe.
Really?
Yeah.
Like
I
good
think,
animal
I
rights
Adrian,
activism?
Yeah. I think Adrian Grenier is like big into like animal rights and humane treatment.
2018.
My
right.
guy.
Yeah. Is he still hot as hell or?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, still, okay. probably, yeah. Still looks the same. Probably still has the same limited range.
I love it.
But
great.
he's doing good work.
That's his best trait.
Look, sometimes you know your boundaries and then you got to
exactly.
find another
yeah.
lane.
Exactly. All right. On that note, we are going to be done for the day. As always, you can send questions to gamingadvice.com. Shout outs to Bowen for letting us use the track Miss You off the EP Pale Machine. Though actually, this might also have the mellow track on it. It's probably the Mellow track on it. We'll keep it on there. Shout outs to Mellow also. Find out more about Bowen at waypoint.zone/BOEN. Find out more about Mellow at Mellow Makes on Twitter, to mellowmakes.bandcamp.com. Any other final thoughts here? What are we going to leave the people with?
Oh, God.
What's. You know what? There it is. One more time. Can I get that one more?
Oh, God.
Oh, God. Peace.
The Rodgers era is over in Green Bay. It ended like 3 p.m. Soldier Field. Like that's when we definitively knew as he like sailed pass after pass, we knew it was done. It was the Bears' day. The NFC North is the Bears' division, not just for today. They're one of the youngest teams in the NFL.
Nick Foles is going to save me again. I believe.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.